Alan, you'll be publishing the NHS Constitution later today. What's it for?
It's to ensure that we bring together in one place, in an accessible document, all the values, the key principles of the NHS, the rights of patients and the public, the pledges we can make, even though they might not be legally enforceable as the rights would, and also the responsibilities of the public using the NHS, as well as setting out what we expect from our staff and what we expect to offer our staff. So I think it's fulfilled that, because it's done that, you know, not in a voluminous document, but in a very accessible and, I think, well-written, short, concise constitution.
Does the final version differ much from the draft?
Well, we had a very extensive consultation. I mean, in the East Midlands, for instance, they had 280,000 hits on the NHS Constitution website. As a result of that, we think that most of the things were in the draft, because we'd already done extensive consultation before that. But a right to vaccinate came up as an important issue. Vaccinations agreed by the joint committee who decide these things. Once they've decided, people have a right to that vaccination. And also a responsibility to let your close family members know about what you think about organ donations. We thought that was a very important contribution, and we've included that. And then lots of changes, you know, more stylistic, and changes to the text rather than in the context.
And a right to information.
A right to information, a right to... That did come out of the consultation, actually. We already put in a right to choice, but people said, well, you can only make that choice if you have the information on which to make it. So a right to have the information means that acute trusts and PCTs and other parts of the health service must ensure that patients have the right information before they exercise those choices.
Convince me this isn't just motherhood and apple pie.
Well, it's not, although, you know, I think there was a danger that this would just be, you know, a fairly anodyne document. It's not, and I think most people's reaction to it, they're very excited about the fact that in one document you can actually set out those principles. You can do it with poetry as well as prose, and you can have very clear rights, like the right to NICE approved drugs and treatments, which exists now, but people don't necessarily know that that exists. It's there in one document. The success of it will come by the way people approach it. If people do look at it and think, oh, it's too anodyne and we won't bother about it, well, we'll have failed, and so will all the enormous group of experts and people from Public Patients Association who have helped us. But I think it's down to them now how this becomes integrated in everyday NHS life. I think it will. I'm confident it will. Let's see.
Will these rights and responsibilities apply to NHS patients being treated for the NHS by private hospitals?
Yes, it'll apply to everyone. Indeed, the key principle sets out the fact that the NHS is an integrated set of services and organisations. You know, it's not a set of competing organisations driven by the invisible hand of the market, as some people would like to see it. So it's an integrated service. And indeed, we will write into the NHS bill that's going through Parliament in this session the duty for everyone involved in NHS services to have regard to it. So I think that's an important part of the Constitution as well.